This is the Amp Hour Podcast, recorded December 6th, 2010. This week, we discuss military electronics and our first workplaces of the week.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble from Chris Gamble's Analog Life.
Hey, Chris, I've heard you got some snow there in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah, more than we can handle around here. It's starting to really look like winter. It's I'm in my fortress of solitude in the basement.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, before that, it was a warm, I don't know, it was a warm fall, whatever. It was, a lot of snow, though. Tons of snow.
So. See, that's completely foreign to me. We, you know, I've seen snow. I've never seen snow in Sydney. I've seen it up in the mountains, which is up at 3,000 feet. Which is where I go canyoning and stuff like that. I've seen it up there very rarely, but no, that's a foreign concept for us Aussies, really, snow.
I don't know, man. I grew up in Buffalo, too, so that was just snow all the time.
Right.
But, yeah,
and,
I don't,
and
I don't
having
mind
the white, white Christmas and all that sort of stuff. It's... Here it's, you know, sunburn and, you know.
Board shorts, yeah.
Board shorts and thongs, which are not thongs, which you guys think are thongs over there. So don't get the wrong idea.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, whatever.
Yes, thongs are sandals. Thongs are flip-flops, I believe you guys call them.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Whereas, over there, they're G-strings here. You guys call thongs are.
Right.
Anyway, that's not a good image.
Well, of course, it'd be electronics. Thongs, though, or G-strings, because that's what we talk about.
Of course,
here.
Yeah.
We have to talk about electronics, so yeah. All right, made it relevant. We are allowed to talk about it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What do we got on today's show?
Well, I don't know if we have any shout-outs today, but I think we do have, our first two workplaces / workbenches of the week.
We do. Let's talk about them. First up is Mike.
Yeah.
And Mike's a New Zealander.
Yeah.
So he
a Kiwi, right? It's a Kiwi.
Yeah, a Kiwi. Just ask him to say six, and he'll say six.
Well, I don't think we should get into the Australia New Zealand thing. I mean,
it's gold.
No, I'll let you leave that on that side of the hemisphere.
Right, this side of the pond, huh? Fish and chops.
Yeah.
Anyway, we love the New Zealand accent just as you guys love the Australian accent. So, and you mock it and all that sort of stuff. So, it's all good.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mike's from Ascot TV in sunny Christchurch. And he's got his bench there. And there it is. Well, we'll put up the photo. You can't see it now,
definitely.
Obviously while you're listening to it. And he's got the Amp Hour logo on the monitor.
I know.
Check it out.
That was very nice. That was a nice touch, Mike. So thank you very much for that.
Absolutely.
Double shout out. And he said four techs are listening too. So
there you go. Hey to the other techs working there at Ascot TV.
And they called you the Steve Irwin of electronics too.
Steve Irwin of electronics. Well, yeah, that's a very American thing. I'm surprised that some New Zealanders said that, but I guess anyone other than Australian will say that. Yeah, I've had that often. The Steve Irwin of electronics. And it's a good thing. Now let's take a look at his bench, shall we?
Oh,
because
definitely.
We can't just say, "Hey, thanks for that." No, I love looking at other people's benches. That's the whole idea of doing this thing. So
looks like a Rigol there, maybe. Is that a
a tech. That looks like that's a Tektronix. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's not high enough res to the picture's
like
not high enough resolution.
Four channel. Looks like the battery power, the floating kind. I like those.
Could be. No, I see a black cable coming out of the back of it. But
you need to charge it, though. You need to charge it.
Right. Yeah, well, yeah, you do. But, that wouldn't surprise me for service work, actually, because those, they're very popular, those floating scopes. And I talked about this on my live EEV blog show the other day. Somebody asked, can you easily blow up a scope? And
yes,
the answer is if you're working on mains powered stuff.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't know that the BNC connectors, a lot of beginners don't know that those BNC connectors are mains earth referenced.
Yeah.
So
that'll go straight through.
So if you put that ground probe on anything other than a nominally mains earth reference point in your circuit, bang. You know? That's
Well, I'm sure he knows that well from the especially CRTs. Well. I mean, CRTs are so high voltage.
Yeah.
That's awesome though. That's a great picture, so thanks to Mike for sending that in.
Yes, and he's in the shot as well, which we love.
A plus,
We want you in the shot, definitely.
Nice.
And I've lost it.
The thing that surprised me most about the picture is that people still fix CRTs, or that fix anything. I mean, that's awesome. You know, how often are people... I don't hear about it much these days. You don't hear about repair shops or anything like that. They're like, oh, just go buy a new one. No, you fix stuff like Mike's doing and all his tech buddies. That's awesome. So
I know. It's
kudos
great. I love it.
Kudos to him. I hope they get tons of business. I think that's a very good thing and very, you know, reducing waste and...
Absolutely. There's still a business out there for servicing stuff. I love it. It's great.
Yeah.
And, I remember what I was going to say now.
Yeah.
Every beginner makes that mistake once. They hook up the ground probe and they hook up the ground clip and they blow something up. And you only ever do it once and then you learn.
You know, when I started my job, I was working on 1,000 volts and I had an alligator clip on it. Probably the worst thing I ever did. And the alligator clip was on a 1,000-volt test point. And it just kind of fell over ever so slightly, and I got close enough to chassis. And I was bent over it at the time, and it sparked right in front of my face. And I nearly wet myself. It was it was a rough introduction to that circuit I was working on.
Yeah.
So.
But you learn from those things. You do it once, and you go, and you still, you know, you have vivid memories of those events, and you really, you know, it's ingrained in your memory.
Either that or you die. One of the two.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's very Darwinian-like.
Yeah.
I love it. Now, let's take a look at what else he's got. He's got a J-Car catalogue, of course, because J-Car's big in Australia and New Zealand. So he's got the obligatory J-Car catalogue. He's got the electronic cleaning solvent and the multimeter. That looks suspiciously like the old Fluke 19, but I don't think it is. I think it's probably the newer model, which is the Fluke 17 or whatever. Because I think very few Fluke 19s still survive. Because
really?
It was... Yeah, there's a history behind that. It was Fluke's first Asian-made meter. First meter made in China, and they tested it in the Asia-Pacific market. So you could buy it here in Australia, New Zealand, and Malaysia and stuff, but you couldn't buy it in the US or anywhere else. So it was... And at the time, everyone went apeshit over it. Because it was, you know, it was a Fluke, right?
Yeah. And it was super cheap.
And it was super cheap. You know, you could buy it for, I think it was $150 for, you know, I'm talking 10, 12 years ago or something. So this was a really cheap Fluke, you know. And it had everything on it. It had capacitance, which was pretty big at the time. And it had most of the features of the Fluke 87. Didn't have the accuracy, though. But, yeah, it was, so it sold like hotcakes. And then they all started dying. They just every meter out there started this just mysterious fault that they started locking up and doing all sorts of weird, you know, weird and wonderful things. And I personally had four of them at work and they all failed. So, yeah, go figure.
Did they ever figure out why they were blowing up so much or why the 87 was so much better? Was it just like the made in China kind of thing or?
I never really found out. I spoke to a couple of guys at Fluke, and they said it used exactly the same chipset as what was used in the Fluke 87, but I believe something was killing the chipset, whether it was static or... I don't know. I never heard what the actual problem was. And the failure mechanism would be different for different people. You know, some would just go haywire and display, you know, random readings. Others would just completely die and, But as I said, I had four meters at work and all of them died. And then everyone on the forums was saying the same thing. And, it was practically every Fluke 19 out there eventually failed. So if you're still using a Fluke 19, so if...
if you have it, save it and it'll be a relic. It'll go in the museum.
Exactly. I actually sold mine. I actually kept three of them, the faulty ones, and I eventually just sold them on eBay. I should have just kept them for, you know, dissection or something like that. That was before the blog, though. That was many years ago because this model came out, it'd have to be 10 years ago now, probably at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that's it. That looks like a Fluke 19. So the new Fluke's actually styled after that Fluke 19. That started the whole new trend of Fluke styling and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting story of the Fluke 19. And what else has Mike got on here on his bench? I see a Bob Parker, the famous Bob Parker ESR meter. As well, oh, yeah. That's a little box sitting next to the sitting next to the meter there. It's actually black, yeah. The little black
one. Oh, okay, yeah.
It's a little tiny black box sitting next to the multimeter there. That's the famous Bob Parker ESR meter.
I've never seen
and
that.
Every service tech has one of those.
Yeah.
So yeah,
nice.
Hugely popular. He sold tens of thousands of those things.
Wow.
Mm.
Perhaps someday there'll be the Dave Jones meter. Who knows.
Right. He gets his name sort of associated with it all the time. It's not just, you know, the EA. Well, it was known because he got published in EA back in the day, and then it was republished in Silicon Chip magazine about 5 years ago or something. So
yeah,
but it's the Bob Parker ESR meter. But now there's lots of others on the market now, so I think his sales are dwindling with that thing. But yeah, unfortunately, he didn't. This is a good example for you people out there. If you're thinking about getting into the kit business and doing that sort of stuff, he didn't actually sell this kit himself. He just sold the pre-programmed Zilog microcontroller. It was a Z8 microcontroller.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he just sold that for a couple of bucks to the likes of Dick Smith. And Dick Smith sold tens of thousands of these kits. So he made, and he sold it really cheaply, this pre-programmed micro. So, you know, sure, he made a couple of tens of thousands of dollars on it, but, oh, no, I can assure you that the amount of money that, you know, each kit was like 80 bucks or something, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They're the ones who made all the money. Dick Smith, it wasn't yeah. Poor old Bob Parker. So, yep.
Yeah.
If you maybe he's an avid amp hour not watcher, listener.
Listener, right.
I keep getting confused with all these different mediums. You know, there's only two of them, video and audio. But
right. What about the other workplace or workbench of the week? I guess we have who's the other one? It was David. David from Delta Q Technologies.
Hey, Dave.
Vancouver, yep. Yeah. Thanks for the
Vancouver.
Shout out, Dave.
Vancouver, love Vancouver. One of my favorite cities.
Yeah, it's a great city. And yeah, so he took a picture of like all his benches. Seems like him and his dad have a pretty badass workshop there. And,
yeah.
I think his main bench. He said he's doing. So he actually got me looking at stuff because he was talking about one of his pet projects is going to be making an all electric DeLorean. Did you see that?
Right. Oh, and is he the one? He's the one that's doing the DeLorean, is he?
He's talking about it, and
he's talking about doing one, right?
Right. Okay. And so I started looking at it, and it is out there. Not to discourage David, because obviously there's tons of different things you could do with that. But I looked out there, and I'm going to post a link to the one that's out there. I think it's just electricdelorean.com.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looks awesome. They refurbed an old one and filled the trunk and the hood with batteries, and man, it looks nice. It's really cool.
I know. It's awesome. I'd love to do that. I'd love to. Oh, it's my dream.
Yeah.
Electric DeLorean. So, yeah, excellent. I hope that turns out, Dave, and I'm sure we can, I'm sure if you do it, we can post all the details and stuff like everyone would love to hear about it. So,
yeah.
And there he is in the photo giving a big thumbs up with a cat in the background. I'm sorry, but you get a thumbs down for the cat.
Oh,
I'm a cat hater. I'm outing myself as a cat hater.
Oh, we all know you don't like cats.
Right.
And anyway. The 555 timer shirt on too, I think.
He's got my 555 timer shirt. Yes, he does.
Yeah,
so
that's great.
Thanks for buying the merch.
Yeah.
We haven't got any amp hour merch yet, sorry.
No. That's okay. I don't know if people wore that out in public, if anyone would know what was going on there.
No,
I wouldn't worry about
it
too much.
I wear mine in public and people just, you know, give me weird stares and stuff like that. So
right.
Yeah.
Right.
What can you do? Anyway.
Yeah. So anyways, thanks to Mike and David, and if other people, like Dave said, you know, they're both very good examples of, you know, the kind of stuff we're looking for. We want to see your bench, we want to see you in front of your bench, you know, smiling, giving a thumbs up, doesn't matter what. And not mooning. Dave said that last time. Not mooning.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
And girls. We would love to see some girls, too.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
In the nicest possible way, of course.
What's that?
In the nicest possible way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So other things that I wanted to talk about with posting. So some of our, Dave and I had been talking about this for posting your questions or your suggestions. I put up a widget on the suggestions page. And basically what it does is it just takes you to my voicemail. So it's a really crude way for people to give questions. But basically in that way, because we don't record live. We have enough technical troubles as it is, right, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, we've already had a few today.
Yeah. This might be the quarter ramp hour this week.
Yeah, it's more than a few, actually. So yeah. We're actually back on Skype at the moment because we had to ditch Google Chat, Google Voice or whatever it's called.
Yeah. Anyways, you can call into that voicemail. It'll prompt you, to record a question or suggestion. And we'll get your voice in the air, and then we'll be able to answer the question like that. So if you're interested in doing that kind of thing, if you have a question or a suggestion, just go ahead and use that. And if we come up with a better solution later, we'll try that because the quality is just so-so. But
yeah, it's not that great. But anyway, it's a start.
Yeah, and I mean, if you ever want to, send in an MP3 of your voice too, we can always use that too. So if you're a little more tech savvy, if not, it'll call your phone and it'll just record a voicemail through there. So, cool. Fun new thing. How about go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to do a quick talk about Dave's bench because
we talked
about Mike's one, and I see an Agilent, well, it was HP at the time, a 54621 mixed signal scope there. I love that scope. I used to have one of those in my lab before I sold it, and he's got a Fluke 189 or a 289 by the looks of it there, and Weller soldering iron.
Yeah,
that looks like the old Weller sort of blue, sort of flat, slopey faced. I can't see the front of it, but yeah, that screams Weller to me. Oh, yes, I can see it now. I've zoomed in. And that looks like a ProTek 506 multimeter there as well. So
Perhaps if people start sending in pictures with all of the test equipment blurred out, that would be good for Dave.
And we can try and identify.
We could actually get something else done because Dave is going bonkers right here. He loves this. This is the real reason we're doing this.
I love looking at what other people have got. And,
see, now, I like that. You see that? Is that a huge motor underneath the bench?
That is. That's a big-ass, some sort of big-ass motor. I have no idea what... what it does, but it's doing something serious.
Well,
he said
in his post too that he works on AC motors, so that's pretty awesome.
Oh, there you go. So yeah, he's a motor guy, and yeah, that's awesome. And in the true tradition of every electronics person, he has a second workshop in his study where his computer is. Yeah. So he's got like a little he's
the
got
comfy
a,
bench.
Actually, yeah. And he's got actually got another Infineon scope in there, so he's well set up with scopes, definitely. So I wish I had a HP Agilent Infineon scope in my study.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
That'd be nice, huh? Yeah,
that's awesome, man. That looks like some sort of weird brand pulse generator or something there as well, and he's got a big CRT monitor sitting on top of that. But yeah, everyone's got to have a second workbench in their study because I do, because a lot of projects are all PC based these days, and they're small, so you work on them and they hook up to USB, the computer, or you're writing firmware and you want to download it, so you sit in your nice comfy study instead of out in your workshop and work from there. So I do a lot of work in my study here. I drag my oscilloscope in. I don't have a second one that I drag into the study. The wife makes me keep the study pretty clean. So so that's excellent. Thanks for that, Dave.
Yeah.
Oh, and if you check out the mechanical bench, that's a real mechanical bench.
Yes.
It's just filled with crap. I love it. And I'm jealous because I don't have a mechanical bench, really. I just don't have room in the EEV blog lab. So I don't even have a vice, I feel so unmanly without a vice.
You have a vice, it's not hooked up right now. It's like not bolted to the thing, so it's worthless.
Right. Well, at least you've got a vice. I don't even have one, so even freestanding.
Yeah. That's great,
Anyway, so thanks, guys, for sending those in. And if you want to get... mentioned on the Amp Hour, please send in your photos and make sure you're in the photo. And girls, we want to see your workshop too. So.
Yes. Everyone is welcome. Let's see, what else we got this week? Tons of stuff, huh? Not tons of stuff.
Well,
I was
no,
in follow-ups, though. So yes. One of the things from so I've been posting some of our posts on LinkedIn because I really like to hear more people, or you know, some more people from industry, because we love our hobbyist friends, and but we think we have some appeal in industry too, and I think there's some listeners out there. Mm-hmm. But anyways, you know, you can get to the older crowd by going through LinkedIn, and I posted the I think it was episode 17 about the transistor types, and one of the guys on there, he posted a link to there's still cross-reference data sheets available for transistors, which I didn't know about. And you can actually still get them in print. You can order them in print, or you can just get a CD, or you can just go download them for free, I think. Yep. So we'll post the link to that.
That doesn't surprise me too much, really, because, you know, it's still a needed service for guys like Mike, who are service techs, They come across transistor designs all the time in, you know, TVs and you know, radios and... Yeah, you know, amplifiers and all that sort of stuff. So yeah.
Well, the way this guy was talking about it, it was more of a. It used to be like a huge industry, kind of like this. Whoever was doing this was banking on it, you know. And
right.
And now it's not as big of a industry. You know, there is a need, like you said, but it's not quite as big.
No, it's not nearly as big as it was back in the 80s or some 70s, 80s. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So it's great, you know. Awesome link, and we'll post that up there. Another one was from Frank. He posted about the... So we were talking, I think, last time or two times ago about CAD programs. Oh, by the way, this is episode 20. We made it to 20, by the way.
Woohoo!
Yeah,
yes.
Hey! All right.
Hey, we'll celebrate it's 32, which is binary multiple.
Yes.
So,
I like base 10, personally. But anyway...
Right. Okay, well, yeah.
All right. I'll celebrate on my own afterwards. I'll have a beer.
Okay. Well done.
So Frank posted about, because we were talking about user interface design and also, you know, going to CAD programs, how, you know, you were saying you'd love to have a huge table where you can interact and stuff. And he talked about a 3D sketch program where you had like a tablet and it interpreted the actual sketches. So this was a prototype sketch program called I Love Sketch.
Yep.
So I don't know, it's kind of cool. I didn't really dig into it too much, but
I didn't see the details, but you draw on the screen. It's like, you know, with one of those pens, like a touchscreen tablet-y,
like a stylus
thing.
Yeah,
a stylus, yes, that's the correct term. And they're big in the art world. You know, you see all these artists, and you know, all the people who draw comics these days, they don't draw it with pencil anymore. They sit there with their big tablet, you know, at their desk, and it's raised to a certain angle, and they just draw it on the screen. And
I didn't know that.
Yep.
Yeah, it was cool.
Actually, there's a YouTube video of Dilbert being drawn. So
I'll have to
post a link to that. Yeah, you can actually watch him draw Dilbert, and it's fascinating. It takes him about an hour to draw one of them or something like that, and it's like a time lapse kind of thing of him drawing Dilbert. So we'll definitely have to post that one in.
Yeah,
or link it.
That's really cool. I've never seen that.
Hmm.
I mean, Dilbert gets a lot of exposure in the
engineering
world, like even professionally, I think.
Oh, it's because it's so spot on. I get the automatic email alert every day, and I look forward to opening my inbox.
Oh, yeah.
There's my
nice.
Dilbert, you know, and it's just spot on. I can relate to every single one of those, and that's why it's so popular, I think. Because everyone's had a boss like that, you know, like the pointy head boss or something. And it's just, every situation is gold. So I don't know where he gets them from. But yeah,
I think a lot of them are suggestions and stuff, too.
I think they're suggestions, they must be. But I haven't seen any place where you can actually suggest stuff to him. So I don't know.
I think people find his email and email him or something.
I think he... Because he started out putting his email on the actual strip itself.
Yeah.
And yeah...
He probably
and
gets more emails than he can
inundated.
Handle.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. The, Oh, yeah, his blog is really popular, too. He has, like, he's very, very opinionated. To the point, like, people get angry at him. So if you, if you don't like opinionated people, you probably aren't listening to us. But, he's got a great blog. And it's some interesting stuff on there. He does, like, some, like kind of interesting stuff with, like sociological studies using social media stuff. And
Yeah,
so
I'm going to have to check that out. I didn't know he actually did a regular blog.
Yeah, so, he does. Mm, yeah.
Jeez. Okay. I'll definitely check that one out.
Yeah. And I had another follow up on here. Another of our favorite talking talking point. Me and Dave continued on.
Don't tell me making your own chips.
Continued on past, and I had Jerry Ellsworth behind me. I believe who else? John Oxer from Freetronics backed me up on this. So I think it's many against one. If there's supporters of Dave out there, we can start a campaign.
Nobody has picked apart my argument. Nobody, not a single person.
Well, here it comes.
Everyone's saying, yeah, it's possible. You know, yeah, it's going to happen. And yeah, we all live in fairyland and utopia land and all that sort of stuff. And we're going to be producing our own chips in our own backyard. And oh, look, go through. I've put all my arguments and points on the AmpHour comments for that thing.
Well, so I saw just those.
Nobody's tried to pick them apart yet because they can't. That's why. Yeah. So anyway. I've set down the challenge. Go and do it.
Okay.
And well, anyway, you go on. You've got yet another proof why it's
going to... I have a chip in your armor. What about obsolescence? Because chip vendors, we've talked about it on here before, chip vendors are ruthless about if you have a low-volume production kind of thing, which would actually be a very good target for this, right? You're not going to be doing high-volume manufacturing in your garage or basement. You're going to be doing low volume, and you need custom, maybe to keep it even, to keep the IP relatively more difficult to get to. You know, right now, people, you know, and actually the link that inspired this was the fact that, you know, Zilog, who you talked about with the Z8 and that Bob Parker meter, they just got rid of that thing. You can't find a Z8 anymore. And now, who is it? IXYS, the FET manufacturer, they bought them now, and they're, you know, reviving a bunch of stuff. Anyway, you wouldn't need any of that stuff if you were making your own chips, right? I mean, like, what's the argument against that, Dave?
Of course, but there's no argument against that at all. My argument is purely based on the practicality of it. It is so... Last week, right, you tried to compare it to the MakerBot, right? It's insane. Making your own chip is orders and orders of magnitude more complex than just extruding a bit of plastic with an XY stepper motor. Okay,
right.
It's just go and look at the... this is where my argument comes in. It's just so... The chemical processes needed are so complex, right? That it's just not going to happen. It's not going to be practical. I'm not saying it's not possible. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure you can definitely make your own chip in your own backyard, right? But it won't be practical. There's so many steps involved.
Right.
That's why these fab houses that make these chips cost hundreds of millions of dollars at a minimum. All right? There's a reason for it. It's you can't compare it to the MakerBot, which is just extruding a bit of plastic, okay? And you can buy those, before the MakerBot came along, you could buy those machines for $5,000, right? Or $10,000.
Right.
And the MakerBot was just
oh, so you're
you know,
saying that
it didn't come out
down.
With a new process.
Okay,
yeah,
I get
it
that.
Just, you know? It, but
okay,
making your own
that's
chips
fine. That's
will
fine.
Always
I'm just
be
saying
complex.
This is an argument for it. I think this is an argument for it. Low volume, you know, you want to have, you know, in perpetuity, you want to be able to make this thing. I think that's the argument for it.
It is one of the arguments for it, but I will counter argue by saying that if you're trying to make your own chips because you want to keep that chip viable, then this is an age-old problem, right? You're probably going down the wrong path. Okay, you're better off just taking the hit and redesigning it for another part. This is an age-old problem, right? It's been going on for 50 years, and it's not just chips.
Yeah.
It's semiconductors or some little
resistor,
mechanical
passives,
widget
anything,
or
right.
anything like that, right? So what, you're going to go out and make your own capacitor because they don't make some weird-ass 0.01% tolerance cap you wanted with zero drift and all that sort of crap? I mean, it's an age-old problem, and solving it by trying to manufacture your own chips, which is probably the most complex process in electronics engineering today, manufacturing process, well, I think it's just madness. I'm sorry, that's... God, nah, you're really pushing shit up
the argument
with a pointy
continues.
Stick there.
I think that's where we're going to go with this one. The argument continues.
Come on, people, there must be
hope
somebody out there who agrees that it's just...
If
not
there are
really
any people that
practical.
Agree with Dave, we would like to hear in the comments, please. Or, you know, you can call in now. You can call in and, you know, argue your case and we'll cut it
and
in.
None of this airy-fairy pie-in-the-sky shit, right? I want reason, you know, practical reasons why it's going to be cheap enough and viable enough and simple enough to manufacture chips in your own home. And we're talking about your own home here, right? Let's not spread
you're a semi-large company, and you want to, you know, there's
people been talking about buying surplus gear from, you know, fabs that are closing down and stuff like that. No, that's, you know, that's that not part of the argument.
No, you're right. That doesn't count. No, I think I don't think your own home, though, because that, you know, that puts a budgetary price on. I mean, obviously, it's going to, like you said, there's a difference in price between like a MakerBot.
Surely, I win. There you go. You just admitted, right, that your own home isn't really viable because it requires so many processors.
It's
crazy. What?
Did the Skype feed cut out? Did I finish? Did I finish there, Dave? I don't think so, man.
No, I'm cutting in as usual.
No, I'm saying that it should be a low-volume workplace where there's actually a little bit of cash. I don't think anyone's saying that it's going to cost $1,000 tomorrow. No one's saying it's going to be the next MakerBot. But, you know, in industry, there are low-volume manufacturing cases where it makes sense.
Well, there are. I'm not going to argue that point. There are people like military companies who have to still keep these, manufacture these chips going. And there's companies out there who will cater for that. We've talked about this before. They will actually still make the 8008 processor or something because it's used in some, you know, space shuttle or something like that.
Right.
You know,
right.
And there's a market for another 10 of them. So they will actually produce them at, you know, $10,000 a chip or something like that.
Yeah.
But, no, because I don't see, the reason for my argument is that I don't see any technology on the horizon or even pie in the sky stuff that will instantly make chips simple to manufacture. That gets rid of all the chemical processes, right? We've got Jerry Ellsworth who's made a point contact transistor, and that's great, okay? And that happened with, you know, Noyce, you know, with the, you know, Schottky and Barden, you know,
how long ago was it?
50, 60 years ago now, right? And it's taken all this time to perfect chip manufacturing. It took, you know, 20 years or something to produce chip manufacturing. And, you know, this is the best minds, the best companies in the business. And it took them, you know, how many processors and how many hundreds of millions of dollars to build these fab plants? To think that somebody's going to come up with some concept that can make a silicon chip on a little XY plotter is, with hardly any of these nasty chemicals they use, it's crazy. Right. Come on, you've worked in a chip fab, right? You know what nasty chemicals are. Tell us about the nasty chemical. I think we've talked about it before.
We talked about sulfur hexafluoride. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just one of the nasty
chemicals,
right?
There's much worse
ones,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Free radicals, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
And you're talking about doing that in your own home. And then how do you do the bond wires? How do you get the bond wires on there? You
want a little... Okay, fine.
Okay, fine. And then how do you package it? How do you encapsulate it? Well, actually, the encapsulation is probably the easiest part, actually. There's a tip out there for you if you want to go out and try and do it. I reckon the encapsulation is not hard at all. Just get some clear epoxy stuff and, you know, away you go. But imagine working under your microscope, just attaching each little bond wire to your homemade chip. It's like...
This is almost worse than you seeing test equipment as me bringing this up again.
Yeah. Well, you did it. You brought it up.
I asked for it.
You asked for it.
You know, you mentioned in the best context switch I can possibly have, you mentioned military electronics, and there's something I want to talk about, military electronics.
Go for it.
I saw an article the other day. They started putting microchips into grenades.
Oh, yes, I've seen this.
Did you see that?
I guess we shouldn't talk too much about it, but yeah, basically it's a little smart bullet or a smart grenade that is set to explode at a certain distance. You can dial in the distance you want, laser range finder,
Let's talk about it. I mean, like, what don't you want to talk about? I don't get it.
Oh, well, because it's talking about war and all that sort of stuff and how it changes the paradigm of war now. Because you can't hide anymore, right? You can't hide in your trench.
Oh, yeah.
You can't hide behind your wall.
I think the relevant question here is more of an, how about that question? How about, would you ever work for a military manufacturer? Would you ever work for a weapons manufacturer? I've talked to coworkers about that before.
Yep. Oh, yeah, yeah, so have I. It's come up. I know people who will flatly refuse to work on weapons, and I'm probably one of them. As cool as weapons might be, I feel bad enough working in the oil survey industry being a greenie. You know, I feel like, oh, yeah, I can't believe I used to work on designing oil survey gear,
you know? Right, right.
And I feel bad enough about
that. Well, you designed it safely, though, right? I mean, you made sure no...
Well, yeah, ours was the world's eco-friendliest oil survey gear, you know. It was very, because actually just the act of searching for oil actually dumps oil into the ocean, because the cables used to be oil filled, and our one was a nice solid one, so it was designed as an eco product. It won the Australian Design Award and all sorts of stuff, so
I don't know, I've talked about that with friends though before, and you know, because it's kind of like where you start to draw the line there, because I'm working on, say I'm working on a piece of test equipment, long shot, right? And the test equipment is then used to, you know, test out a missile, and the missile then goes and blows someone up. Now, that's two steps removed. Do I say that I'm, you know, am I okay with that? Now, say I move one step closer now. Maybe I'm a sheet metal former for a missile, right? Instead, say I'm not working electronics, but I'm still making a casing for, you know, a missile. So I don't know. I don't know where that stuff stops, because like you said, you know, they get a lot of research dollars. They do some cool stuff. And I don't know what the answer is to that, because I've never really been approached by it. But
well, I have, and the answer is obviously the one step removed. If you're directly working on that military project, then you know, you are producing the missile or whatever. You know, we're at the company I used to work for, we produced we produced a torpedo, right? But I never worked on that actual project. But there it was. I walked past it every day.
For a company that takes money from?
I used to work for one of the world's largest defense manufacturers, Thales. Right? Yeah. They're a French. They're the world's the French is one of, I think they were the world's biggest at one stage. So I used to work for them, but they do everything. You know, they do oil survey, they do the they do the Magellan GPS receivers. They do they're such a huge conglomerate that you know, I didn't really care about that aspect, that I was working for essentially a military company. But the fact that I wasn't working on a, you know, I wasn't actually working on a military, you know, I wasn't working on a missile or something like that, new smart bullet. So I didn't care about it. And I don't think, you know, you talked about, you know, you design an oscilloscope or something and it could be used for something like that. Or you're working at Microchip and that chip is used in, you know, a missile. If you worry about that, well, you may as well go be in the bush. You may as well not be in the industry. Right? Yeah, exactly. Herd sheep for a living. I mean, that's just, you can't worry about that.
That's a good point.
That's just nuts.
The other thing I've heard before too is, you know, because there is a very legitimate flip side, I think. And, you know, you say, well, yes, this, you know, X, you know, missile might be hurting people, but on the same time it's protecting other people. So that kind of just becomes a whole other gray area of ethics and maybe that's not NAMP hour thing, but
yeah,
I think a lot of our listeners are approached by this kind of thing. I think you got to make your own decision, but it's tough. It's real tough, because there's a lot of jobs there. There's a ton of jobs there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of people actually approach it from that aspect. As you say, well, it's used as defense. It's helping defend our country. And I think a lot of Americans who work, because American industrial military machine is massive.
Yeah,
you know, the amount
monstrous.
It's just, it's the biggest in the world. So how many millions of engineers in the U.S. working on some sort of military weapon?
And that drives drives other demand too, right?
Get us wrong. It's, you know,
if they need chips, then they get chips, right?
As much as I hate war and everything else, it's you know, it does help the industry. From if you set everything else aside, it, you know, it's good for the industry as a whole. Right. So
there's a
lot of people I think who use that as the excuse to live with themselves, or, you know, to, I guess, not live with them. Anyway, know what I mean. To make themselves feel better about, you know, I'm working on defense. This missile defends the United States, you know.
Right, right. Or anyone, really.
Yeah.
might have to bring back our Dave says something nice about the U.S. segment. Do you remember that segment?
Well, no, it's just, you know, the U.S. is a prime example here because it's
no,
you
know, I know, yeah,
has a massive military.
Probably the bigger example, the biggest example, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's the world's biggest example of the military manufacturing machine. Here in Australia, we do, you know, some stuff. I've worked for a company that does it, but yeah, it's quite small time compared to the US, that's for sure. Yeah. So, hey, leave some comments. If you're working on are you working on a missile? You know, are you working on, and we're talking about a weapon, not like I was. Yeah, I work in a military company, but
That's interesting.
Yeah, are you actually designing something?
I would be interested just to hear about the kind of the culture around it too. You know, oh, hey, we had a really great quarter. You know, we shipped X number of missiles, right?
To Iran or somewhere.
To whoever, right? I mean, like, I don't know how
well,
that works.
Exactly.
Is it a different kind of engineering culture? Is it just kind of like people keep to themselves and get the work done? Mm. I mean, I'd be very interested in that kind of thing. And probably they're not going to be able to take pictures in front of their benches.
No, I'm sure not. How do you feel about your weapons ending up in the wrong hands? Because, you know, the U.S. military is armed, who are now some of their enemies, like the, you know, Osama bin Laden. The U.S. armed him back in the 80s to fight the Soviets.
Right. Yeah,
so,
that's,
you know,
that's
your
like the
weapons
same,
could be in his hands.
Did you ever see the Iron Man movie?
Yes. Love Iron Man.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the same kind of thing that he runs into, right?
Yeah.
Probably one of the better examples of engineering, not role models, because obviously the guy was a dog, but...
but you cool.
know, yeah,
still
yeah,
cool.
But,
yeah, yeah,
but yeah, a good exposure for engineering as, hey, isn't this awesome kind of thing. Although in the second movie, it was a little ridiculous. We're hopping into popular culture right there. Anyway.
Yeah, I think that's a great example. You know, if he realized his weapons, you know, they ended up in the wrong hands and...
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. They could be used for bad things.
Homework this week for all Amp Hour listeners. Go watch Iron Man. there was another military related kind of thing I wanted to talk about. Did you see the thing about that virus basically that was an army?
The Iran, it didn't, somebody wrote a virus that over that took out the Iranian nuclear facility or something.
I was flabbergasted at how, I mean, obviously we talk about hardware a little bit more on here, but there are some software junkies too. And whoever did this, oh my God. Like, did you read the details on it?
No, I haven't actually gone into the gruesome details of what it actually did. And
basically it's a virus that carpeted the entire world. This virus was found everywhere. It had to jump an air gap, so someone had to load it from a USB stick onto this thing because there was no internet connection on the centrifuge. And then it had to recognize, okay, now I'm on a centrifuge. It has X, Y, Z, you know, different machines attached to it. And then it implements this complicated algorithm to just subtly ruin experiments over the course of a year.
Oh, that's insane.
However you feel about the politics of a nuclear whatever, that is some badass programming. Like, that is like...
Absolutely.
Who comes up with that stuff? Like...
Well, someone at the NSA, maybe?
I guess so. You know, hearing about that and then my, you know, a USB driver not working on my computer, that just is kind of depressing, I got to say.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
It's like, where's that guy?
That is some impressive...
Oh, it's so impressive.
Software engineering, that's just incredible.
Yeah, I am so impressed. I doubt they're listening. I doubt they'll ever hear me, but you have one fan. And I'm sure it's not just one person either. You know, it's a whole army of, you know, hackers or whatever it is. It honestly sounded fake. Talking about movies, Iron Man before, you know, there's some ludicrous stuff in Iron Man. This movie about the hacking into this Iranian centrifuges, ludicrous movie, but I loved it. And
it's very Hollywoodish, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's
definitely
incredible.
Is. Yeah. Oh, it was awesome. So, you know, I'll post a link. It's a Fox News link. I'm not a big fan of Fox News, but whatever.
No.
It's a well-written article, and it's definitely worth reading. So check it out.
Right.
And I don't know about you, Dave, but I'm done talking about war for now. So.
Yep. I think that'll pretty much do it. Unless you want to go to battle again over the chip manufacturing. But no, that's a war for another day.
That is a battle. A battle for another day, yes.
How about we talk about little embedded companies being overtaken by the big players.
Yeah,
you wanted to talk about this.
Yeah, so Mentor got or they've been buying two different open source people. I'm not sure they're both embedded companies, but you know, Mentor's huge. They're a huge company, and there's not and they grow by buying and, you know, sucking in more companies now. But yeah. It's interesting that it's open source. You know, like that the fact that. Hey, we really and they say that they weren't talking about they were targeting it. That you know they said this will significantly increase the value because of its because it's open source.
Well, they've actually said, you know, this is a direct quote. We believe that the future of embedded software development depends on the wide availability of open source software and tools.
Yeah.
And you know, this is coming from the general manager of Mentor Graphics, who are one of the absolute monsters in the EDA industry, who have built their entire companies around charging millions of dollars for
such kind of
convoluted
weird, huh?
and complex software. I know, it's a complete paradigm shift. It, you know, to hear them say it, but whoa, it's big. You know, you hear Microsoft say it these days, don't they?
They say,
you know, there's all these big companies are realizing, well, you know, if we can't beat them, let's join them, and we can make some money out of it by selling services instead.
Right, so, yeah, that's definitely the target area. That is definitely the target area. And, I mean, that's probably the eventual future from hardware, too. I mean, like, a lot of companies already do open up their reference designs, some more than others, some less than people would like. But, I mean, we'll probably see more and more adoption of that because, much like the social media stuff, they see this as a, hey, free work. Right? I mean,
it's snowballing big time. It's just, you know, a lot of companies are falling behind. As soon as one starts, you know, then their competitors go, something we don't? Yeah. Oh, we better jump on the bandwagon. You know, it reminds me of the, you know, the Element 14 Design Spark battle. You know, they're almost copying each other tit for tat in terms of website features and free PCB tools. You know, one came out with free PCB tool. Oh, we better do that. And, you know,
and we got a response from them over
we
your
did. Let's
your
talk
dislike
about that.
Of,
yeah,
FAQ last last week.
I hammered RS Design Spark last week on the show that, you know, they you couldn't find any info about their PCB tool. You went to their website and it's like, well, there's no, and their FAQ sucked. And well, they listened to the Amp Hour. Thanks, guys, and they said, oh, yeah, we agree, we're going to fix it, and thanks for the feedback and all that sort of stuff. So I don't think they've fixed it yet, have they?
I don't believe so. But they're in the works.
Anyway, I know, they've put some info on there. They've actually updated their, if you go to designspark.com/PCB, there's actually some info there. But once again, they don't actually tell you. You know, they say it's, I think, it's written by a big PCB design company with decades of experience. Well, who? I know who it is. It's Number One Systems, right?
Yeah,
if you go to numberonesystemsside.com or whoever it is, they're the ones who write the Design Spark software, but they're not promoting that. They're sort of,
right,
you
it's
know,
the buy resell or the, the OEM.
Exactly.
Blah, blah, blah.
And they're not directing them you to their website where if you want to go buy the pro version or something, but I guess, I don't know, maybe they're not going to sell it anymore because the RS Design Spark, unlike the Element 14 one, come on, get off your ass, Element 14 with Eagle, right?
Yeah.
The Design Spark one is completely free, no size limitations, as I banged on about last week.
Yeah.
There's no limit to the size of the board. There's no limit to the layers. It's the full package. It's the whole shebang. Whereas Eagle is still pushing that old the free version's only two layers and you know, 160.
We
by...
want Freegal. That's going to be our that's going to be our rallying cry.
Freegal.
We want Freegal.
Oh, Freegal.org. I'm sure it's not taken. Let's go and register the
domain. All right,
there
we go.
Eagle,
yeah, we can sell it to
Eagle,
Element 14.
Free Eagle.
Free Eagle. Free Eagle. Free Eagle.
I love it. So I actually predicted that right at the start when as soon as the RS Design Spark came out, I predicted that I tweeted it, I think. You can go look it up probably, that I predicted Eagle would eventually be totally free. They will keep outdoing each other in the free stakes until both packages are without limitation completely free. So RS Design Spark have made the first move and Eagle I think will eventually follow and they should.
Yeah.
But that's great. Good. They actually listen. So they appreciate feedback, and they wanted feedback on the website too, because they essentially admitted that they don't really know what they're kind of doing with the website. They've just, bought a package and it does everything, but they're asking for feedback to help,
Yeah, that's great. As long as they're listening, that's a good sign. Yeah. So more power to
them. I've got so much feedback on the website because, and the blog and how it works and the forum, you need a proper BBS forum for a start. People don't want this blog format for Q&A.
It's okay to try new stuff. I think it's okay to try new stuff.
No, I don't like it. The format is terrible. People prefer
you're an old codger, Dave. Come on, man.
No.
Be willing to try something new.
There's no threaded comments. You can't...
threaded is important.
Nice, powerful BBS forum.
You know me. I like the Stack Exchange kind of... I like that kind of style.
Yeah. Well, they can do a lot better than what they're doing because they bought this one package. It's the same as...
Everyone else.
Same bloody package as Element 14,
Right.
And it just does everything. And,
right.
And it's a jack of all trades, and that's its problem. It doesn't, people are happy to go and use a separate BBS forum. Trust me. They're, they would love it. If you had designspark.com/forum and it was a PHP BBS or a Simple Machines forum or something like that, people would flock to it. Anyway. Yeah, don't get me started. I've got much feedback on that.
So since we're briefly on the topic of social media, another of your favorites, did you see that little post I have in there, Dave?
I did about the...
It's the saddest day. Jones's diminishing blog law has already been named.
Oh, not really.
I think it has.
Probably. Okay. It's called the 1% rule.
Yeah, the 99.1. The 90-9-1 rule.
9-1, which is shit. Anyway, they're talking about in terms of forums and stuff like that, which I guess
mine's
more a bit blog specific. That mine was sort of targeting the magazines. This is pretty general. Okay. This one sort of tries to cover everything. But it basically, it's true. It backs up my theory that it's an order of magnitude drop each time. So that, if there's a 100 people going to a forum, then only 10 people are going to be active.
Right. And then only one is posting most contributing. Of the stuff. Right.
And 1% is going to
dominate.
What is the 1% going to do?
He's going to dominate the post. He'll be the most
He's going to dominate the post and then there'll be 90% who just lurk and won't contribute at all.
Right. So, yep. It's okay. Yeah.
Well, mine
so
was
maybe,
sort of...
I was going to say, maybe we should change the wiki page and add it to it, but, we just lurk around there, so...
Yeah, we probably, Well, we can point to the Amp Hour, which is another, which is a reference source, is it not?
I believe so. We are a radio show
show. We can point to that. So there we go. We can add it in. So, mine was more directed at the fake advertising promotional figures that... the magazines and stuff put out. That's where it stemmed from. That, RS Design Spark will say, or Element 14 will say, oh, yeah, we have 10,000 subscribers, but really only 1,000 would actively visit, would actively come back. And then there's an order of magnitude drop, so only 100 would actually contribute out of those, 10,000 or something. So that's, anyway. Yeah, I'm sure we can. Maybe we can edit the wiki page. That'd be
all right.
Cool.
We'll give it a shot. And we'll see if we're in that 1% now.
Right. Anyway, that's pretty close to the mark. So it backs up my theory, which is great. I love it.
So how are we doing on time? I really don't have any reference because we've had a couple blips today.
Yeah, we had a 20-minute dropout there. It took us about 20 minutes to fix all our shit up, and we change over to Skype and change computers and stuff. Yeah. I believe we've got 5 minutes left.
All right. So one thing I wanted to mention, because it's actually kind of getting to be an older post now. So Uptown Maker, did you see that post?
No, I haven't. Do tell.
So I follow him on Twitter. But I saw this, and I think it might have been showcased in Make and a couple other places, but this is a really great article.
I had a look at that.
Electronics tools you didn't know you needed. And some of my favorites were your nose. I like that one.
I wasn't blown away by this list. I expected, what cool thing can I go
at? Oh, yeah,
no,
you were
I
expecting
already
a
have
gadget.
All these things.
Yeah.
So don't get too excited, people.
Oh, well, yeah. But I like the flashlight a lot, too. So I thought that was a very good one. Having like a really directed light source, yep. I think that can't be understated because you got
Yeah, I've got one of those flat on my keychain. I've got a 70 lumen torch on my keychain. Very valuable, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's
great. When you're trying to peer under a microscope, you're trying to read a part number just to get some light from a different angle, and it shows up, you know? So having a flashlight's,
That's awesome. Yeah. So anyways, I like the post. I don't know. Yeah, it wasn't anything mind-blowing, but it was useful.
Right.
And I've been using it recently. Did you see my post about the crowbar?
About the crowbar hack.
The crowbar was not
as a heatsink. Yes.
The crowbar should not. It was not on the list, but it apparently should be because right. You never know when you're going to need a crowbar heatsink.
Right, or to bust open a door or something like that.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
If the door to your lab's locked, you know,
it's probably inside your lab. You know? So I guess if someone locked you in. But,
you've got it. Yes, I'm sure it would be the pointy head boss. You know, has locked you in.
Oh, there
the
we
lab,
go. Yeah,
and yep.
I've since revised my crowbar heatsink to a proper heatsink, and I actually switched over to a FET. But
right,
it was a fun little project. I liked it.
Yeah, it was cool. It, not exactly the world's most efficient heatsink there, but it works. Yeah, I've done similar things.
Yeah. And I definitely referenced that video of yours. I really like that video.
And oh, cool.
The heat or the programmable current sink. Thought that was good. So
yes, it's very most relevant.
Yeah. And as we close out, why don't we talk about? Did you see the Jerry's new video?
It's awesome. Yeah, I saw it. How she made a TSA security scanner. Out of a feed horn, and she basically modified a feed horn, and which is working at 10. I think it's working at what's the frequency?
10 gigahertz.
Okay, it is 10 gig. Yeah, yeah, and and she got a centimeter resolution or something like that,
so
she could
like
see her hand. You could see the outline of her hand and stuff like that. So
right.
Fantastic. So she proved all the doubters wrong. She actually tweeted that she was getting a bit upset with all the doubters claiming, why she can't do it and all that sort of stuff. So she stuck it right up them. I love it.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, that's great. You know, the thing that struck me about the video, I was expecting like this, you know, awesome high-res display. And right. I realized that like, obviously it was a first step. So that was a ridiculous assumption on my part because even what it was amazing. But yeah. You know, I've come to expect that these days. You know, you see HD everything. There was another project that I'll post a link to. There was an Arduino-based IR camera. So first off, hearing Arduino, I shouldn't have expected high res, but I expected something, and it was like just super blocky. You know, tons of pixels everywhere.
Oh, really low res. Yeah, it's about as low res as you can get.
Right, and it's you know, it's okay because you're just proving that you can do it at first. If you wanted to commercialize it, you'd probably pick something else. But the thing that struck me about it is that, you know, if you really do want to do high res, you kind of have to start moving towards a different model where it's like DSP based now, where you're almost capturing an image and then processing it. And, you know, because if you're rastering like Jerry is too, that's a lot less efficient. You got to go a lot faster. So,
And just, also she's working at a wavelength that, well, the wavelength is only, you know, a centimeter or two, you know, it's only a couple of centimeters. So,
right.
You know, there's only so much you can do there. Somebody posted a link in her comments to my video I did at the trade show in the US where I showed one of these machines, and it's got a rotating feed horn, I think it is. It actually rotates around, and it is quite high res. You can see your hand, you know, behind the wall and stuff like that. So I think it was working it from memory 30 gig or something like that. It was much higher.
That was a commercial one?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but it sort of looks like a belt, one of those hand sanders kind of thing. And it's got a plate in it which rotates, and the antenna rotates, I think, inside. And it's, and once again, it's doing a similar XY mapping thing. So it's got like a mouse kind of thing. So it knows its location, so you can go over it. So you scan it a few times and it builds up a better image. So, those doubters, I don't know why they doubted Jerry on that. Because if you give it a moment's thought, which I'm sure she did, and she was pretty confident that really, you know, if you've got the wavelength, then well, it's certainly possible to get a crude image. So I don't know why, you know, anyone would say it's just flat out not possible. I think that was just stupid of them. They
obviously
don't know
enough. Because I mean, they're doing that in airports all over the U.S. right now.
Ah, well, yeah, I'm sure it's a totally different, concept. Yeah. So I don't know how the backscatter machines work. I haven't really looked into them, but she was promising a backscatter machine. You know, as she says up front in the video, I think, you know, she hasn't worked. It doesn't work from a distance. It's not like you stand there and you can see a whole body and stuff like that. You know, it's it only works, you know, like inches. It only works a couple of inches away. So,
right.
But well,
still very, very impressed by it. So
very cool hack. Very cool.
Next up, she's going to prove you wrong on your chips at home.
Like I said, please prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. But it's got to be practical. I don't want to see a couple of transistors on a chip and they go, no, I produce my own chip at home. No, I want something practical. You pot it, you do everything. It's got the leads and the pins and the whole, the whole shebang. So, but please prove me wrong.
All right. We'll get there.
I don't know how she has the time. That's the third hack or something she's produced in like the last week or something like that. She must be working full time on this. I can't see how she's not.
She's going crazy all day with this stuff. But whatever it is, as long as we get to keep seeing videos of it, that's good for me.
That's awesome. Yep.
Yeah.
And I think it got 60,000 hits in the first day or something. It's gone massive. I'm sure it's linked. There you go, 85,000 hits now. So that's a huge. I think that's almost her most popular one now, apart from one other or something. So, not surprisingly.
Yeah, that's great.
But yeah, on you, Jerry. Keep it up. Love you. Love your show.
So, anything else? I don't know if we're. Are we out of time?
I think. Who cares? Let's just call it.
All right. We'll play the Amp Hour theme over and over again, so that'll make an hour.
I'm sure we're out of time. Actually, I said it was 20 minutes, didn't I?
I have no idea, Dave. I'm sorry.
I said 20, I think, we wasted. So, no, I think we've got 5 left. There you go.
All right, good. All right.
Okay,
so
come on.
I have a rant. I have a rant.
Do it. We haven't had a rant today.
Okay, right. So do you ever hear about Rambus?
Yes, I've heard about Rambus.
I have a personal gripe with because the computer I am recording on right now is a 2001 Dell Dimension 8100 with 512 meg of RDRAM. And if you want to buy RDRAM, which came out in, I believe, 99, 2000 or something like that, it still costs about $250 for a 256 megabyte stick of RAM.
Right.
Because... they're the only ones who make it. And so this basically a patent factory. And now they're at it again. And so they recently announced that they're suing, like, they had won a settlement against NVIDIA, I think, a while back.
Oh, that's big.
But now they're going after everyone.
Everyone.
And this is just, like, the worst example. I bet at this company, they probably have 2-to-1 ratio of lawyers to engineers.
Oh,
because
for sure.
They are just... I mean, they have a lot of patents, so they obviously did a lot of research, but at the same time, maybe they're just really good at getting patents.
Maybe they are. Maybe they have a solid case. Who knows?
Maybe. Yeah, and maybe. And if that is the case, then I'm okay with that. But I don't think they do. Here, listen to the list of all the things that are at fault, what I'm guessing is they have a very basic building block, and then it was built into all these other things. Here's the list. PCI Express, certain serial ATA, certain serial attached or SCSI, DisplayPort interfaces, DDR, DDR2, DDR3, mobile DDR, LPDDR, LPDDR2, GDDR3, graphics processors, media processors, communications processors, chipsets, other logic integrated circuits. And now they're moving on to LEDs. That was a separate note. They teamed up with GE and now they're getting into LEDs. So now I don't even and you know what? They're located they have a facility in Cleveland. That's the LED with GE.
Oh, right. Okay.
And I'm just like, what the hell is going on here? Like, what is it? I maybe have to dig into it more, but it sounds like they honestly patented a transistor. Like, that's what it sounds like, you know?
Yep.
Or like a sense amp or something like that. You know, like, I don't get it. And they're suing like Samsung, Intel, all the big names.
Oh, everyone's in there. HP, Hitachi, STMicro, Freescale, Broadcom, LSI, MediaTek.
Yeah.
Poor.
Yeah.
They're just
using the shotgun approach to try and, you know, get money where they can.
Yeah.
And some of it might be deserved, like you said, Dave. I mean, that's okay. If it is...
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
The classic example of that is the Australian CSIRO, the Commonwealth Scientific Research Association here, government organisation. They develop Wi-Fi. I mentioned this in my very first EEV blog episode, and they won. They beat everyone. They developed 802.11 Wi-Fi, and everyone just ripped them off. And they eventually won. And now every company in the world has to pay royalties to this Australian government organisation for effectively 802.11 Wi-Fi. And they won. Wow. Everyone came.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I think it's brilliant.
Yeah. And I mean, well, the thing that's so, I don't know, some of it, like the crazy thing about it is, like, even like the standards that you and I think of, like SD cards, USB, all that stuff's licensed. You can't put the name on there unless it's licensed.
Yeah.
And maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it's not. I think, I mean, we've talked about patents before, but like, this seems a little out there.
This is too broad, whereas the CSIRO one was very specific. It was Wi-Fi, and that was, you know, that was it.
Right.
I mean, and they had a very solid patent, you know, one patent that just covered it. But this is just, as you said, the shotgun approach. It's just, nuts.
Which is very common
with these patent, you know, leeches, really.
Yeah.
It's...
I don't know. I think about it. Like, I talk to people that are like I talked to one, you know, a guy who's still in school who was doing an internship and really bright kid, like probably one of the smarter young engineers I've met in a long time. Mm. And he's talking about going to law school. And, you know, I'm like, what? I mean, like, yes, I understand the idea of getting ahead and success and all that stuff. But I'm like, what do you want? Mm-hmm. You want to be a patent lawyer? I mean, like, patent lawyers are very important for certain cases, and you will make a buttload of money. There's no doubt about that. You will make a lot of money. But it just sounds like, personally to me, that sounds like the most boring thing in the world. It's
my
like the opposite.
My brother-in-law is a patent attorney.
That's fine. I mean, I'm sure he makes buttloads of money, but at the same time...
Well,
like,
he's not, because he just drafts patents. He doesn't go out suing. He's not a real lawyer that sues people.
Even that, it just sounds
attorney,
like...
He's which is a... Anyway, I mean, I know.
I have a lot of lawyer friends, too, and the whole concept of law is lost on me. So maybe that's a bad starting point, but man, patent attorney... It was just the fact that this kid was so smart and so bright, you know? And just like wasting all this design talent on going and sitting in a courtroom and arguing for money. And it's like, man, there's more out there than that. That's my personal opinion. If people disagree with it, it's fine. If your brother-in-law disagrees with it, you know, he can come over to US.
He does. Every time I talk about patents on my, you know, or patents. Sorry, a lot of people, you know,
it's actually
patents here. You know, it depends on how you pronounce it. We actually say both patents and patents, depending on the... Either's fine. Anyway, he keeps, you know, I hear about it over the dinner table, you know, I watched your blog on you were bashing, you know, bashing patents again, and why, you don't understand. And, God. Anyway, but his job is basically to take nice, readable engineering design documentation and turn it into gobbledygook.
Whoa, back up. What was that word?
Gobbledygook.
Oh, I think you said Corbygook. I'm like, is this
Australian word? Yeah, that's a Skype thing. Skype.
Okay.
We really can't hear each other here. It's
Skype made a new word, Corbygook. I like it.
Gobbledygook. So, I don't know. That's his job. His job is to draft patents and, you know,
take boring.
Good design engineering, which us engineers produce, and, you know, we love producing really good documentation. And his job is to turn it into incomprehensible garbage.
I will say I've talked to a friend who's going to law school right now, and she told me that there's like a really big push for like lawyers to go in the opposite direction and to make it more readable to like the layperson.
Oh,
and
really?
And if that's the case, you know, I know there's no lawyers listening, but if that's the case, go lawyers. That's awesome. That's like the best thing I've heard about law school in years.
Yeah,
so,
I agree.
That's brilliant. Keep it up. And make it simpler.
Yes, please. And I think that's all for today's Amp Hour. So,
yes,
thanks for joining us, everyone.
Yeah, and if you got questions, remember you can record them live now on voicemail. And or if you have pictures of you in your lab, send them on in.
Yes, please.
Well, see you next week, I guess.
See you guys. all right. Stop.